parsha begins, Vayakel Moshe kol adam bnei Israel, Vayomer lehem, Eila hadvarim asher tziva Hashem lasot otam. And Moshe gathered the people and said, these are the things which God commanded that you should do. So I do think we need a little bit of context over here to understand what is the significance of this. If we pay attention to what has been going on in Sefer Shemot, and again, for simplicity purposes, we will follow Rashi's understanding. This is the first opportunity that Moshe has had to speak to the people ever since he went up the first time to receive the Luchot. He goes up, receives the Luchot, comes down, the people are sinning, Luchot are broken, he prays for them, is finally invited to come up. According to Rashi, is actually 3 times that he goes up. He prays for a middle 40 days up as well. According to others, there's only 2 times that he goes up. But either way, he goes up, goes up on Rosh Chodesh Elul, comes down in Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, very appropriately, the people are forgiven. And this Vayakhel follows the immediately end of last week's parsha. If you remember what happened at the very end last week, Moshe came down from the mountain with the second Luchot. So this then is the next day. He gathers everyone together, and therefore this is the first opportunity that he had to speak to the people. So where do you begin? Which means, again, presumably while up on Sinai, God taught Moshe many, many things. So Moshe now, when he has this educational challenge, where do we begin the teaching process? In a certain sense, I could be simplistic and say that he had 613 different places he could have begun. But he chooses this particular place. And again, he gathers the people together, Vayakhel Moshe et kol adam bnei Israel. He gathers everyone together, which itself is somewhat similar to what happened last time at Sinai when all people gathered together. Vayomer lehem, he says to them, Eila hadvarim asher tziva Hashem lasot otam. These are the things that God commanded. So, of course, where he begins then becomes particularly interesting. So where does he start? Sheshet yamim te'ase melacha. For 6 days your work should be done. Uv'yom ha'shvi'i yelachem kodesh. The 7th day should be a holy day for you. Shabbat Shabbaton la'Hashem, it should be a Sabbath for God. Kol oseh bo melacha yumat. Whoever does work will be put to death. Lo tevaro esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha'shabbat. Do not light or cause any fire to be lit in all of your inhabitations on the Shabbat day. So the choice of Shabbat as the starting point, you know, on a certain sense, we'll all say to ourselves, well, it's a good one. It's one of the top 10. You know, you can start any place. Some of us may have started with honoring your parents. That may be the place where we would start our education. Avodah Zarah would be perhaps a nice thing, but it is interesting that this is the one which is chosen. But I just want to look at it because I think the choice is while on the one hand is very obvious, on the other hand it may be somewhat difficult. But before I get to the difficulty, let's think about the why it's obvious. It could have everything to do with not to do idolatry, which means don't seek other gods, don't seek other things. Rather, God created in 6 days and rest on the 7th, which goes right back to the very core of monotheism. So it could be that as perhaps a response or antidote to idolatry or a certain golden calf, that maybe Shabbat is a wonderful way. On the other hand, they can go a little bit further along the same lines, that maybe even the certain elements of the calf that we saw last time, the kol ha'am, and all the people, achlu, and it doesn't say kol ha'am there, achlu v'shatu v'kamulu tzachek, that they ate and they drank and they made merry. Well, maybe Shabbat is the day that those things should be, which means not just as a replacement philosophically for the eagle, but also as a replacement experientially for the eagle, which means if you're seeking out a religious experience, so therefore the religious experience should be found in Shabbat and not going looking for other places. And it's only within the lack of a Shabbat experience where people may feel themselves being empty that they go looking for other kinds of things. So as I said, I could try to work out some kind of an understanding about how Shabbat should be the thing which responds to the Chet HaEgel, because again, that's the if we'll completely mix all of our metaphors, that's the elephant in the room in a sense, because that's what's hovering above them. That's a terrible sin that they just now did. And that's, despite that sin, they somehow survived for another day for Moshe to come down with the second Luchot and to speak to them again and to gather them together and then to share the Torah. So I said, this particular choice is interesting. Now, the difficulty with this choice, which I'm not saying is an insurmountable difficulty, but it makes it more interesting. This is not the first time that Shabbat is mentioned in the book of Shemot. For that matter, it's not even the second time it's mentioned. For that matter, it's not the third time or the fourth time. So I think you're getting the idea. Shabbat's been mentioned numerous times till this point. So what is being added with this particular talk? Now, and just before, and then I'll let you say something. And there's one more thing which is very interesting, and that is source number 5, which is Perek Lamed Aleph, which we've listed the various times over here that Shabbat has been mentioned. But source number 5 is of particular interest, and you'll tell me why in a second. Vayomar Hashem Moshe Lemor, Vatada Be'el B'nei Yisrael Lemor, Achet Shabtotai Tishmoru, Ki Oti B'ni Uveinechem Ledorotechem Ledat Ki Ani Hashem Mekadishchem. Ushmartim Et HaShabbat Ki Tukodashi Lachem. Mechalaleh Mot Yumat. You can go back looking if death was ever mentioned till this juncture with the lack of observance of Shabbat. Whoever does melacha, their souls will be cut off. Now, and we continue, and I think you're familiar with the rest of the formulation. Now, why is that interesting? What comes immediately after that pasuk? What's the next pasuk? So the very next, that's the last thing which was said prior to God giving Moshe Luchot. What's the next pasuk? The next pasuk is the people saw that Moshe delayed in coming down and begins to tell us the Chet Egel. Which then, again, suggests another level to this, and that is the last thing that God had said to Moshe was keeping Shabbat. That's the final thing, again, if we're going to say the sequence of things reported is of significance. The very last thing he says is to keep Shabbat. They then do the Chet Egel. Then again, we have the 40 days, the 40 days up, the 40 days of praying, 40 days going up again, coming down. And then, Vayikal, gathers them. So now, where does he go back to? So he goes, okay, so what were we up to right before we had this little problem over here? So as I said, this particular issue of sequence also suggests something interesting. So far, what is it that we've so far explored? We've explored the reason that Shabbat should be at this particular juncture, one for philosophical / theological reasons. You get confused in terms of making an egel. Well, no. Know that God created the earth, and therefore this should cause us to reject any type of idolatry. Second was experiential, is that the people seem to have this need to go and to experience the egel, so therefore the experience of Shabbat could be one which can counter the egel. The third one is what we can call a more technical or boring explanation, but one based upon sequence, and the very last thing that God said before the Chet Egel was about Shabbat, so it's interesting that's the first thing that Moshe picks up on right after the whole thing has finally come to an end. Yeah. Okay, that's a very good comment. I'm not sure if you know how good of a comment it is yet, but we'll see as we continue. But first, to go back, as I said, this is not the first time that Shabbat is mentioned. The first time that it's mentioned is, well, there's one time that's not here because it's not there, if that made any sense, and that is by Mara. By Mara, it says that they were commanded certain laws, Sham Sam Lachok Mishpat Sham Nisau, so there Rashi says that they were already given Shabbat, but it's not there in the text, although it is referenced in the text. The next time that Shabbat is mentioned, and of course we skipped Bereshit. In Bereshit, as you mentioned, we do have creation that stays resting on the seventh, although what's interesting about Shabbat as it is mentioned in Bereshit is it says nothing about man keeping Shabbat. It says God created on 6 days, rested on the seventh. It is totally theocentric without any reference whatsoever to humanity responding to this in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, it's interesting, because if Shabbat really were because of creation, and by the way, I'm not saying it's not, obviously it is, but if Shabbat were really part of creation, then we would have to ask ourselves a question, and that is, so why should non-Jews not keep Shabbat as well? And why does the Gemara actually tell us the opposite, that a non-Jew keeps Shabbat? That is somewhat theologically troubling. Which means, why isn't Shabbat a universal law? Why isn't Shabbat one of the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach? Why should Shabbat essentially be something which is has a human side to it, but only a Jewish side to it? Okay, and it's also interesting to try to compare the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach with the Aseret HaDibrot, and you'll notice right away that there's a very, very strong correlation between the two, but the differences come when it comes to the sort of like positive things. But one of them, I think the most glaring difference between the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach and between the Aseret HaDibrot is the keeping of Shabbat, and that's not an obvious thing, especially when you read Bereishit, God created, so therefore, why should all of mankind not create? So now, it's interesting, therefore, to look at actually the first reference that we have to Shabbat as recorded on a human side. That's why I'm stressing. The first reference to Shabbat from the human perspective, which we call a homocentric as opposed to a theocentric consideration, that would be in source number two. And what's the context? We only learned this around a month ago. So what's the context? The context is the month. V'yihi b'yom ha'shishi, Perek Tzayin, v'yihi b'yom ha'shishi, laktu lechem mishne, shnei ha'omer le'achad. There was twice as much man which fell. V'yavo kol nisei edav v'yagidu l'moshe. And they came and they told Moshe, guess what? There was a double crop today. What's going on? V'yomer lehem hu asher diber Hashem, Shabbaton Shabbat Kodesh l'Hashem achar. That's exactly what we were referring to, where God spoke and said that tomorrow will be Shabbat. This is, I think, the larger consideration to say that God, that Moshe already told them about Shabbat by Marah. Because here it says, oh, this is what was said, we don't have any place that it was said. So it's very difficult when the Torah makes a reference to something which we're unaware of. So as I said, this strengthens the tradition that Rashi tells us that by Marah, they already were informed about Shabbat. Because again, because of this reference, Hu Asher Diber Hashem, Shabbaton, Shabbat Kodesh L'Hashem Machar, Et asher tofu, afu, ve et asher tivashlu, beishlu, ve et kol ha'odef anichu lachem demishmeret ad boker. Ve'yinichu to ad boker, kasher tziva Moshe, ve'lo yivish, ve'rima lo haitabo. All the other days, and if anybody took extra, it went bad. Now, it lasted till the morning, nothing went bad. Ve'yom Moshe, ichluhu hayom, ki Shabbat hayom la'Hashem, hayom lo b'timsu b'sadeh. Eat what you collected yesterday, because today is Shabbat. But it's interesting, Shabbat Kodesh LaHashem was in Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Pasuk Kaf Hei, Ki Shabbat Hayom LaHashem. So it's still interesting in terms of what I'm suggested earlier, the theocentric. God rests on the seventh day. So if God rests on the seventh day, what's going to happen? Mun's not going to fall on the seventh day. The Mun factory is closed on Shabbat. Right? It's Shabbat LaHashem. Lo Tumtzu B'Sadeh. Sheshet Yamim Tilketuhu. And here we have our first formulation, really, of Shabbat. For 6 days you should gather, uviyom hashvi, Shabbat, lo yebo. Seventh day is a day of rest. V'hi b'yom hashvi, yatzu min ha'am l'kod v'lo matzo. So, leave it to the Jews. So a bunch of them went out and desecrated that first Shabbat. And the desecration is that they went out anyway to look, maybe we'll get some extra mun, and so on. So, I hope you're all disturbed with Pasuk Kaf Zayin. You know, again, it's the same absurdity in terms of the ego that they see the mun falling, but nonetheless they can't help themselves, and they're still the mun falls and stops on one day, but they still can't see it as being a sign or instruction from God. The next reference to Shabbat. And again, there are those that we're skipping if we go on a midrashic level, including the war against Amalek has a Shabbat element to it as well. But we'll skip that, unless you don't want to. But it's again, it's not in the text, so therefore it's not as compelling. The next reference to Shabbat is, of course, source number three, what we better know of, known as the Aseret HaDibrot. Zachorti Yom HaShabbat LeKadosho Sheishit Yamin Tavod V'Sita Kol Melachtecha. V'yom ha'shvi'i Shabbat, l'Hashem Elokecha, lo ta'aseh kol melacha, ata v'bnecha v'itecha v'abdecha v'mentecha, uv'imtecha v'gercha shebishirecha. Why? Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et ha'shamayim v'et ha'aretz, which is very interesting. We should rest on Shabbat because God rested as well, which I can also, I can just as easily have said, why? God rested. What does this have to do with me? But over here, we do see that there is this specific linkage, although, nonetheless, anybody who's sensitive, I don't mean that the rest of you are not sensitive, but anybody who's sensitive legally, in terms of a legal reading, will have to notice that there's something over here which is very different from the first. Again, let's go in order now. Let's make believe we only know things as they're presented to us. So we know Tet Zayin. What does Tet Zayin say? Don't collect the mun. Why not collect the mun? It's not going to fall on the seventh day. There won't be any mun. So what do I do? I collect mun 6 days. I don't collect mun on the seventh day. So what's the Shabbat? I don't collect mun. How does Shabbat manifest itself? I don't collect mun. That's the entire range of Shabbat law. Right? Don't collect mun. Very simple. And by the way, why not collect mun? Because there's not going to be mun. If they did break Shabbat when they went out, how do they break Shabbat? This may be very important. How do they break Shabbat? So one, you can say by going out of the home, or they carried baskets with them. That's one of the references. They carry baskets. Why would they carry baskets? Like Little Red Riding Hood. They carry the baskets to be able to collect the mun. So the collecting of the mun had within it, even though they didn't find any mun, they still broke Shabbat by carrying the baskets with them. So is there some reference over here to carrying? I'll come back to that. I have no question that there are various midrashim on this, but it's not as clear. It's not as clear in the text. I'm sure at some point you learned this and someone had a very nice message that they had with this, and I'm sorry. Where are you? Are you in source 2 or 3? We have this non-reference by Mara. We have a reference by the Mun. By the Mun, we have this implication, some people did something wrong. What it is that they did wrong, so that already is debated what it was that they did wrong. As I've already told you, one suggestion is they carried their baskets with them, and therefore the problem was one of Hotsa'ah, that they carried things outside from private to a public domain, and then, or alternatively as well, carried Arba Amot within the public domain. So that right there we have a problem. Now what I was starting to say in source number 3, here there is more intrigue, and I'm going to say again in a technical legal sense. If you go back again to Zachorti Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, okay, that's easy, more or less. Then, Sheish Yamim Ta'avod V'Asita Kol Melachtecha. So now of course what I realize, I have two words that I really need to know what it means. One word is Avodah, and the other word is milacha. And unless I know what the words avodah and milacha mean, and are they synonymous, do they mean the same thing, and so on, then I have a problem. So now what do I need to know? I need to know what exactly does milacha mean in order for this to be significant at all. And as I said, then it slips into theology, because God created in 6 days, although the word melacha is not used there. This asiya. Asa Hashem et Hashemayim et Haaretz Yom HaShabbam. V'yanach b'yom HaShabbat kein b'rach Hashem et Yishabbat v'yikadshehu. That's the reason that Shabbat is imbued with holiness, is because God did not work on the seventh day, so therefore it is a holy day. But by the way, that itself is interesting, that this is a holy day. That's the one remnant from Bereshit. In Bereshit, we were told about the holiness of Shabbat, but we were never told about a human side or a human obligation of Shabbat. We were told, by the way, that we should work. In Gan Eden, we were told to work. Work was good. But we were never told about the importance of man connecting to that holiness of this day. Again, so to go in order, in Tet Zayin, we're told specifically not to go and collect on the seventh day. In Shabbat, in Aseret HaDibrot, we have a much broader consideration. The broader consideration is that we should not be doing any melacha. We're told on 6 days there is avodah and melacha. The seventh day we are not to do any melacha. So of course what we need to know is what does melacha mean? We can argue about source number 4, which is in Perek Kaf Gimel. Right. As I said, not in the Aseret HaDibrot, but only in that purely theocentric perspective. Source number 3, we can debate whether there's any reference to Shabbat there whatsoever. Sorry, source number 4, because over here the main, it seems to be, it's really talking about Shvi'it. So we'll read, we have what I can call a social law, in Perek Kaf Gimel, source 4. One second, it's clear perhaps to you. In source number 4, V'ger lo tilchatz, which is talking about a social law, V'temidam nefesh ger ki gerim yitimer v'tzrayim, V'sheish shanim tizra'a et aretz achav asavta tefota, which is a very interesting first introduction that we have to Shemitah. Shemitah follows this idea of the disenfranchised not having, and we need to take care of them, and therefore, in a sense, what Shemitah becomes is a day that it's a year that everything becomes equal. All of what I've collected now becomes ownerless, both in terms of my field and in terms of loans which are made, which means the common denominator there is to try to help those who are not as well off. V'sheish shanim tizra'at artzeach v'asavta tefota v'hashvi'it, seventh year, tishmetena. V'natashta, and leave it, v'ochlei evyonei amecha, which means that now you see why I went back to the ger lo tulchatz, to the evyonei amecha, v'yitrom tuchal chayat asadeh, kein taseh lekamecha lezedecha. Sheshet yamim ta'aseh ma'asecha, uv'yom hashvi'i tishbot. L'man yinuach shechor v'chamecha v'nafesh ben I will agree with you that an easy way of reading this is that this is in fact talking about Shabbat, although it's not universally understood that way. Some see it still as following from the Shemitah. And Yamim really means Shanim here. But as I said, I'm happy either way. Right. And then it flows into the Shalosh Regalim, which leads us back to where we were before, and that's Perek Lamed Aleph. Perek Lamed Aleph, the whole thing becomes a little bit more serious for the simple reason that now death is included within the punishment. Or, you know, if you want, I'll stay away from the punishment, but I'll talk about a value system. That Shabbat is considered to be such a significant law that those who don't keep it, that it's one which this is what they're deserving of, if you prefer to put it that way. So here you have the covenant, the sign. Whoever does melacha. So now what do I need to know? Yeah, again, now I really need to know what melacha is, because now the stakes just got a little bit higher. This is not just this nice theological thing, or this idea, maybe I'll take care of the disenfranchised. This now became something that those who don't keep Shabbat, there's a major, sheshimim yaseh melacha, v'yomashvi Shabbat Shabbaton Kodesh l'Hashem. Kol aseh melacha b'yom Shabbat mot yumat. And I could have bolded that Shabbat, that melacha as well. So over here, it's a little bit, as I said, the stakes are higher, which leads us back to source number one. Source number one, then, is the next reference to Shabbat, and of course, that's this week's parsha. So the question then becomes, so now what's added? So again, Moshe gathers everything together. Eila ha-divrim asher tziva Hashem la'asot. Otam, sheshem mitaseh melacha, uv'yom ha-shvi yelachem kodesh shabbatun la'ashem kol ha'osa bo melacha yumat. Lo tavor esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat. Now that addition to lo tavoru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat, that's what became so interesting, because perhaps now I can come to the conclusion, so what is it that I can't do on Shabbat? There's only one thing that I can't do. And what's that one thing that I can't do? The one thing I can't do is la'avir esh. I can't use fire. Now, on the other hand, as anybody who has studied any kind of scientific material, you always need something which we would call an operational definition. You have a word you don't necessarily know the meaning, so you look in context to find out what the meaning is. What Perek Lamed Hey does do for us, and I have another page here that you don't have, because we had a little compassion for the trees, but I have over here pretty much the rest of Perek Lamed Hey and Lamed, and a bit of Lamed Vav. And what I did for myself, and as I will invite all of you, you can do this on your own later, is to notice how many times the word milacha is used in the next couple of chapters. And the answer is a lot. It's used again and again and again. I'm skipping to Perek Lamed Hey Posuk Yud. The first number of verses after Shabbat was about collecting all types of raw materials. The Kol Chacham Lev Bachem Yavo V'yasu Et Kol Asher Tziva Hashem. So there we have a language of Asiya. And it says all these things that need to be done part of the Mishkan finally, it says Trumat Hashem leMelechet Ohel Moed on Pasuk Kaf Dalid LeKol Melechet Avoda LeChol Melecha Asher Tiva Hashem LaAsod. That was Pasuk Kaf Tet Pasuk Lamed Aleph Uvedat BeChol Melecha LaAsod Kol Melechet Machshavet LaAsod Kol Melechet Choresh Kol Melecha BeChoshvei Machshavot. It's called Melechet Avodat Hakodesh, Melechet Asotatam, Melechet Avodat Hakodesh, Melechet Hakodesh. And I think you get my point. The word Melecha is used again and again and again and again in the Mishkan. And this is something which a lot of us, I suspect, know, although I'm still going to question you on it. And how do we know what we can't do on Shabbat? So what's the answer? The answer is the things which they did to build the Mishkan or the things we can't do. And I only have one very simple question, and my simple question is why? And your answer to that's going to be, well, look what you just now showed. And the word melacha is used again and again and again. But that's not the answer. The answer is, again, why does God choose to use the definitions of Shabbat in terms of the building of the Mishkan? Was that clear, that second question that I just now asked? The first question should be very obvious. How do I know what I can't do on Shabbat? And what's the answer? I can't do melacha. What is melacha? Well, look how the word melacha is used in the next couple of chapters. Which, by the way, now we have another reason why Shabbat is mentioned at this point. Because we need to connect. We need to finally figure out what melacha is. We're constantly told you can't do melacha. Let's work backwards. All of us are observant Jews, and therefore all of us know there are 39 types of work that we can't do on Shabbat. Right? Where did the 39 come from? It came from the Mishkan. So what's my question would be, well, first, well, how do you know? Well, now, this is how we know. Because the word melacha was used over here, don't do any melacha, and then it uses the word melacha again and again and again within this chapter. So now we know that the work that you can't do on Shabbat is the same kind of work that was done to make the Mishkan. And that level was very simple. Did you understand my second question that I asked? Second question I asked is why? Which means God is very creative. No pun intended. God could have juxtaposed the use of the word melacha in any area sense that he wants to. Or, there's actually an easier thing that we could have said. God also could have listed. And there, God could have written the Mishnah, which we find in the Gemara in Shabbat. We could have found that Mishnah. Okay, here are the 39 things that you can't do. That would have been, by the way, a very efficient way of doing things. So, but instead, it was left to make this type of understanding between the Melechet HaMishkan and what you can't do on Shabbat. So I said, that becomes a very interesting thing. So don't answer me and say, oh, the word Melecha means this. No, this was done, in a sense, the way this was written, I think we all understand now, Shabbat was mentioned already 1, 2, 3, 4, right? It was already mentioned a whole bunch of times. There wasn't really a necessity for Shabbat to be mentioned again, although the one thing which is interesting is, what's about fire? Why is fire be mentioned over here? But on the other hand, it says the word melacha by Shabbat and the word melacha here again and again and again, and that's how Chazal understood. Or if you want, you can even say Halacha Moshe Mesinai, but this is just how they saw it very, very clearly, that what you can't do to build the Mishkan is the use of the word Melacha in the same context with the giving of the laws of Shabbat. So it becomes a very, very obvious application of law, but still we all get the sense that something is missing. Let's take a look at Rashi, source number 6. Lo Tvaru Eish, do not cause fire to be burnt. Yesh mi rabotenu omrim havara, it's lighting a fire, lilav yotzet. V'yesh omrim l'chalek yotzet. Now, those words may be meaningless to you right now, but there's a huge difference between those two opinions. What Rashi's reporting is from the Gemara, which we'll take a look at in a second, which is in source number 7. But first let me explain it, and then we'll read the Gemara together. Shabbat has, as we know, 39 categories. For some reason, the use of fire was taken out and mentioned by itself. So it becomes an exception. So is it an exception to all the other rules and it stays as an exception? Which, by the way, may actually, as we're about to see, mean that fire has a lower level of I'm afraid to say it, but I'll put it this way, a lower level of prohibition than the other ones, which, by the way, I think is completely counterintuitive on many, many levels. But the fact that it becomes an exception is it lalav. What it means by lav, as opposed to something which is punishable by death, does this just become one of the things in the Torah it says, don't do it? And it doesn't have the same punishment. Lalav yotzeit. It becomes a regular lotase. Right? Don't do this. And it's not included in the severe punishment. That's one approach. The other approach is lechalek yotzeit, to teach you that if you, to divide it, to tell you that. Okay, now I'm going to say it a couple of ways. One way I'm going to say it is not real, but I want you to hear it anyway. Maybe I would have thought when it says you can't do, that if you do melacha on Shabbat, then you're put to death. Maybe only if you do all 39 melachot. Maybe you're only guilty if you do all 39 melachot. Only do one, that doesn't count. Only two, it doesn't count. Five, it doesn't count. Now, this is not a serious formulation, but you understand this could have been a question. On the other hand, I can ask the same, I can go the other way around. What if you did three different things on Shabbat? Now, obviously, if you did that on purpose, so then that's a very silly question, because they only do kill you once. But if you do it on by accident, then there's a Korban Shogeg, which is included. So if I break Shabbat in three different ways, do I bring three different Korban Shogeg, or do I bring one Korban Shogeg? So the truth is, there's a number of different technicalities involved in Shogeg, meaning, I know it's Shabbat, I know that I can't do these things, but I forgot. I forgot I can't do this. So now the second opinion is lechalek, to tell that you're guilty on each one independently. Which means if I break Shabbat in three different ways, so therefore each one counts as its own milacha. And as I said, that's why I gave you that first idea. Maybe you need all 39 together. No, it's that each one is independent, each one by itself considered milacha, and each one would require its own korban in the instance where it's broken by accident. Let's look at source number 7. Ve'ein li'ela b'zman she'beit ha'mikdash kayam, b'zman she'ein b'beit ha'mikdash kayam, minayin tam lomar, et shabtotai tishmor mikdash ay tiro, mashmiru b'shabbat lo'olam, af mora shabbat, mora mora b'mikdash lo'olam. Ela saltotai t'chamuna teiti mihavara, we would have thought we can learn it out from fire, t'toni d'ber b'shmol, we learn from Mishmol, lo tavru eish b'chomot shvotecha, ma tam lomar, what does it teach this? Which means, why is this stated independently? Ma tamad lomar, what does it come to teach you? Ila Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yossi, what does it teach you? Lilav. Rabbi Yosef's opinion that this is just a lotase. It's not on the same level of all the other malachot. It's don't do any malacha, and the list of all the malacha is the rest of what we find in Parshat Vayakhel. But this is just a lav, don't do it. Ila Rabbi Natan, but regarding Natan, lichalek. In order to tell you that you are guilty for each one of these independently. Tanya, Havara l'lav yatzta d'verbi yosi, Rabbi Natan amar l'chalek. So therefore, those are the two opinions that Rashi mentioned in source number 6. Let's look at Rashi on the Gemara now, explaining the source that he was citing. His explanation of Gemara, why is fire written by itself? But he said not to do all malacha. L'lav yatzta l'omer she'ein chayvim alea karet v'skila, el'lav be'alma. Just, you're not guilty of a death penalty, just regular, don't do it. Which is a much, much level thing. But by the way, am I correct in saying that this is counterintuitive to us? That fire should be seen as the least significant of all of the milachot? Ketinu lechalek. What does it mean when it said lechalek? Shelo tomar einu chayv skila ad shechilo shabbat bekol ha-milachot. I shouldn't say that I wouldn't be guilty until I did all of the milachot. Lekach yatzta havara min haklal lechalek. In order to divide, mahavaram yuchedet shi av malacha v'chayv alav karet v'skila, just like by using fire, it's one of the av malachot, and you're guilty either karet or skila b'pnei atzma itself, av kol shehu av malacha, and every one of them is considered to be an av malacha. So there, I think we get a good sense of what Rashi just now said, although it's very interesting. You look back at Rashi in the Chumash, right? He didn't explain it all. So unless you knew the Gemara and knew the explanation, this Rashi, I don't know how much it would have helped you. And he's noncommittal in terms of which side that he went to, but he says that he's really explaining again the parshanut, why is Shabbat mentioned by itself? So he says, okay, some say like this, some say like this. And Rashi, as we all know, sometimes does that. The Rashbam, in source number 9, Lo tavaru eish, lefi shebiyamim tovim ktiv asher yochal lekol nefesh hu levado yaseh lachem. Sham hutra havara eish la'afot levashel. Avol b'shabbat k'tiv et asher ta'afu afu mi ba'od yom. Back by the month, it says what you're going to bake, and cook. That was only on Friday. Right? We do our cooking for Shabbat when? On Erev Shabbat. Mi shalo terach Erev Shabbat lo achel b'Shabbat. But what about on Yom Tov? What about on Chag? On Chag, you're allowed to cook. So what the Rashbam is saying is actually very interesting. He's saying that along the way over here, from the first time that Shabbat was mentioned, we've had a whole bunch of other laws introduced as well, including laws of Chag. And one of the laws of Chag is that you can use fire. So now we've come back to Shabbat. Okay, don't do Melacha on Shabbat. And has to stress, and by the way, fire is not allowed on Shabbat, even though fire is allowed on Yom Tov. So what he gave us then, I think, is a very interesting technical reason why Shabbat had to be emphasized again. Good. Excellent. So excellent. So on Yom Tov, it's not the only thing. It may very well be then, if we'll extend the thought of the Rashbam, there's actually the 39 melachot. As I said, it would have been easier for us, at least, if God listed all 39, but he doesn't mention all 39. And the same way that this is mentioned by itself, it's actually possible that carrying is also mentioned by itself to take it out of the group. Which means, and again, where is it mentioned? Back by the man. Ru'u, I'm reading right now from Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Tet. Ru'u ki Hashem natan lechem haShabbat, al kein natan lechem haShishi, lechem b'yom haShishi, lechem yomayim. Shvu ish tachtav, al yitzei ish m'komo b'yom haShabbat. On that verse, it's understood, Shvu ish tachtav is understood, at least by some of the sources, to indicate that one is not allowed hotza'ah, one is not allowed to carry things on Shabbat. So if that's the case, then I actually would have more than one exception to the rule, Shabbat on the one hand and hotza'ah on the other. And by the way, I think that it's worth pausing for a second. I wrote about a certain, what I described over there as a certain democratic concept of Shabbat. I need to explain this. When I was learning Rabbi Soloveitchik's shiur, one of the years, the topic we were learning was about carrying on Shabbat. We started at the beginning of Masechet Shabbat, which is also interesting, because how do you start Masechet Shabbat? The first thing that you start with is carrying. That's where it begins. Which is also, of all the laws you should start with, so there some of the commentaries say the exact same thing that we said before. What? On Yom Tov, you're allowed to carry. On Shabbat, you're not allowed to carry. Let's start with the thing which is different, right? The added law, and that's where the laws of Shabbat. Now, Rabbeinu Tam is cited a whole bunch of times as saying something a little pejorative about carrying. He calls it, this is the language of Tosfot, he calls it a melechet grua. Melacha, melechet grua, he calls it. Grua. Melechet grua. And the reason would be very, very simple. When I look at all the other 38 melachot, how exactly do I define a melacha? I define melacha, so let's enter into the world of brisker terminology. I have such a thing which is called a gavra, that's us. I hope you don't mind the sexism in the gavra. You have a gavra and you have a chefza. You have a person and you have an object. So what is it that you need to be guilty on Shabbat? You need to make a fundamental change within the chefza. The object becomes a different object. A person needs to do something to change the object. That is how you do a malacha. You have this interaction between the gavra and the chefza where the chefza has changed. On Friday night, we had a little bit of intrigue. My kids never know when I'm just being lazy or when I'm being frum. There was extra challah that needed to be frozen, so I didn't do it. So my son turns to me and goes, is there a problem freezing it? So I said, no, I just don't want to go downstairs. So that was the whole thing. And then he started to go, well, why not? So I said, you're just making it cold. You're not changing its form. Nothing has changed. I said, by ice, then there's what to talk about. At the end of the day, it'll be allowed as well. But by ice, then you can say, hold it, it was water, and now it became something which was frozen. So then I could begin to talk about, oh, look, the form has changed. In order to be guilty of doing something on Shabbat, there has to be a change within the chefza. The object needs to change. When it comes to carrying, which Rabbeinu Tam calls a melechet grua, a weak or bad or inferior type of malacha, nothing happened to the object. The object is exactly the same as it was beforehand. The object is the same. True. The object is the same exact object. Nothing happened to the object. Yes. When Rabbi Soloveitchik said this, I tried to say to him that maybe the object is the reshut, which has changed, and not the apple which you're carrying. And he thought that was the silliest thing he had ever heard. I got waved off on that. But he said then something which only he can say. This is the kind of thing that no one else would even think in these terms. He said that when he was born in Prussian and he was raised in Chaslovich, and these are small towns. And then, when he was a little bit older, he moved to Warsaw. And Warsaw is a city. And in Warsaw, it was a city, and there was change, and there was the trade unions. But among the trade unions, he understood that there was a big fight between the unions that are actually creating things, the trade unions, versus the people that only bring things from one place to the other. And they didn't want to allow the people that were bringing things to be in the same unions with the people that were creating things. So he says, oh, that's Rabbeinu Tam. Which means no one else other than Rabbi Soloveitchik ever would have connected this type of thing. He goes, oh, that's Rabbeinu Tam, because they think it's Melechet Gerua, which means the people that are creating things, they could be in one union, but you're just carrying from one place to the other. What in the world are you doing? So in a certain sense, the least amount of creativity for any type of Melecha is Melecha of Hotza'a. On the other hand, I would argue that the greatest amount of creativity has to do with fire. It has to do with man's use of fire, man's use of energy, man's use of, again, harnessing energy and utilizing it is really where man's greatness, in a sense, comes from. So it becomes very interesting that these are the two which are separated from the list. It's also very interesting that these are the two which, in terms of Yom Tov, because in a sense, these are really two extremes. From the highest degree of creativity to the lowest degree of creativity, and both of these are separated from the rest of the group. Maybe even to tell you that on both outliers, as it were, both extremes, they're still included within the laws of Shabbat. Which is why I keep on saying that it's totally counterintuitive, and unless he's just looking at it on a technical level, why is it taken out of the group? So now, therefore, it has a different law, and it's not considered to be a malacha, as I said. So, we need bottom lines over here. The nafkamina is a korban shogeg. The nafkamina is if somebody does more than one malacha, so then do they have to bring more than one korban? The Ibn Ezra writes in source number 10, Lo tevar ish bavur shirskir b'yom rishon v'shvi'i b'chag ha-matzot kom alacha lo yaseh bahem lahatir ochol nefesh omar tabi shabbat lo tevar ish lafot lechem l'vashel basar. Right, very similar direction to the Rashbam, ki ha-ish tzorech l'kol machal v'hagon Rav Sadia, who of course is Rav Sadia Gaon, chiber sefer nechbad Shuvot al hachalukim al kodmenu al ner Shabbat. As simple as all of you think about the lighting of the Shabbat candles and how that's just like a basic thing. Yeah, of course you light Shabbat candles. That's what Jewish women do. Rav Sadia, who was writing against the Karaim, had to write a whole thing about how lighting Shabbat candles is allowed, because they claim lo tevar esh b'chol moshvatechem. You're not allowed to have Shabbat candles lit on Shabbat. Lo tevar esh, you can't cause it to be lit. But no, we say you can't light it, and it's not that you can't cause it to be lit, which is, of course, very interesting. Now, there are two things I want to say. The only question is how much time we'll take to say them. There's another thing. This goes back to your comment at the very beginning, which I asked you if I wasn't sure if you understood the full significance of what you were saying. I want to go back to the point that I raised. And again, there's two levels to this. And as I said, if I can, then there's one more thing I want to throw in. Why is Shabbat correlated to the building of the Mishkan? As I said, he could have just given us the lists why they correlated. So one thing that I would say is that both of them have to do with holiness. If we'll think, and I don't want to get too technical, but just in terms of basic ideas of physics, we have space, we have time, we have matter. Shabbat is about holiness in terms of time. The Mishkan, on the other hand, is holiness in terms of So it's interesting. It's both in terms of space and matter. I take the gold and I'm going to turn it into the Kruvim. I'm going to take this, meaning I have Shabbat in time and then I have Shabbat of space and matter. And it's very interesting that now, again, I just made a very, very simple statement, but I still think it's very interesting that the Torah is willing to say, or the Torah is telling us, teaching us, that holiness in terms of time is derived from holiness in terms of space and matter, which again, you could have just said, yeah, holiness is generic. All holiness is basically the same. But there seems to be, as I said, just this other level. Now, there is, in my mind, a fascinating midrash. It comes in a couple of different places. The thing about this midrash is that there's going to be a word which is going to be used. And the word which is used will later on become a key word within Luriana Kabbalah, within the teachings of the Arizal, to the extent that there will be certain people who think that this is a Luriana concept, but I'm just going to point out now that this concept, which I haven't said what it is yet, is found in Shmot Rab in source number 12, and Pesikta Derav Kan in source number 11. So let's take a look first at 11 and read what it says. Bishash Amar Lo, in the moment that God said to Moshe, Vasuli Mikdash, make for me a mikdash. Amar Moshe l'fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, Hinei Hashemayim v'Shmei Hashemayim lo yechalchucha. V'ata amarta v'asuli mikdash. It's like, what are you talking about? If we didn't make v'asuli mikdash, if we didn't make a mikdash, would God be homeless? God be sleeping on a park bench? God needs a place to live? I'm saying the whole thing is such an absurdity, but that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says according to this midrash to God. Amar lo kadosh baruch hu Moshe lo kishata sovur. It's not what you think. Ela esrim keresh mitzafon beesrim keresh bidarom shmona bima'arav vani yored umitzamtzem shchinati beneichem lematan. Is rather basically like the movie says, God says, if you build it, I will come. If you build this place, what word does he use? Ani mitzamtzem Shechinati. Now, that's the Lurianic concept of Tzimtzum. I'm just pointing out, as I said, it's much, much older than this. Where essentially what Moshe's question is, that God transcends time, space, and matter. So how can I build a place for God? It's an absolute absurdity. As I said, the same formulation is found in source number 2. You can look on the top of page number 3. The same thing is expressed. Od elisha erad ve'etzamtzem shechinati b'toch Ama alama. I'm going to come and I'm going to do an act of tzimtzum. Now, what does the word or the concept of tzimtzum mean? It means that God will do something. I would use the word contraction, but I've been told with a group of women that's a bad word to use. Right? So, if you have a better word, a different age, that's okay. So, it's a sense of limitation, it's a sense of self-limitation, which means, again, it goes back to this absurdity. God is outside of matter, outside of time, space, and matter, so then how can you create a space and God will be in the space? So what's the answer that God says? It's not really possible, but I will do this thing which is called tzimtzum. So, I want to say something, and if we get this, great. If not, then I'll say something else, which maybe we'll get. And the same exact question I can ask in terms of creation. Essentially, God transcends time. So then how does God create time? It's really the exact same question all over again, just directed in a different area. God is outside of time. How does time create it? So what's the answer? God transcends time. So then how does God create time? So the answer is that God somehow performs this kind of gesture of self-limitation, or this thing which we call the tzimtzum. Which means if we'll think for a second, the moment before creation, yes, the moment before, so what time was creation? What day was creation? Day is easy. What day was it when the world was created? The first day. Good. What time on the first day? So that becomes far more interesting to me. What time on the first day? So we generally say... Before is infinity. Before is complete infinity. So what moment is the world created? So vayi er vayi boker. So how do we generally understand that? That God created when? God created on Saturday night, the second Shabbat is over. So therefore, right? That's when creation begins. So now, how is creation... So what was it before creation? So before creation is infinity, and now I have this act of self-limitation, because now I have time, and this infinite God somehow being within time, so I have the self-limitation. Self-limitation continues. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I get to Shabbat. So why is what I'm saying right now interesting and not the way we normally have thought of it, because we would have thought that God creates, God works, because we think about us and we work, but no, God works. God, being that we're finite, how do we work? We work by doing things, by being creative by things, by changing things, and how does an infinite being create? An infinite being creates by being mitzamtzem, by holding back. So therefore, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are all days where God holds back. But what happens on Shabbat? On Shabbat, we have this reversal of God holding back and reverting back to the concept of infinity, as it were, which means the lack of tzimtzum, which means the moment before creation and the moment after 6 days of creation are really the exact same day. But all of this emerges out of this idea that God's creation, in a sense, is an absurdity and goes back to this point of tzimtzum. So I'll ask again, so why are the laws of Shabbat derived from laws of Mishkan? Because they both are dealing with the same absurdity, and that absurdity is God being involved within time, space, or matter. Right? So those would be the different sides of it. Man, on the other hand, is in the image of God. So what does it mean being in the image of God? Yeah, so in a mirror image of God, so God is infinite when we're finite. God creates by holding back. By the way, which name of God is used in creation? Bereshit bara Elohim. What is Elohim? Elohim is midat ha-gvura. Eizohu gibor. Hakoveshet Yitzro, which is exactly this idea of self-control or holding back. But man is in the image of God, so how do we create? We create for 6 days by going forward. So we go forward Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So what happens on Shabbat? On Shabbat, we hold back and we practice Tzimtzum, which means the highest that man can get in terms of his consciousness is this meeting point with God, in a sense, the lowest that God can get, if that sentence made any sense whatsoever. God on an infinite level we can't begin to understand or relate to, but only God on a tzimtzum level can we possibly relate to. So therefore, man, on Shabbat, we get to this level of creation. So what is Shabbat? Shabbat is zecher lema'aseh breshit. Shabbat is a memorial to the act of creation. How does creation take place? By God holding back. What do we do on Shabbat? So therefore on Shabbat we hold back, and therefore by us holding back, we in a sense become very, very godly. Ma'aseh. Ma'aseh. Breshit. Zecher lema'aseh. Right. Zecher lema'aseh. Breshit. To the act of creation. What is the first act of creation that took place? Vayehi Or. The very first thing that God does is Vayehi Or. That's creation. Now, again, as funny as this sounds, when is the Vayehi Or in a sense? Vayehi Or must be that first Saturday night. Take a look at Rabbeinu Bechaye. Well, first 15 and 16. 15 is Yerushalmi. Ein b'vorchan al haner ad shiu tola oro. You don't make the bracha on the ner on Saturday night until you make use of its light. That's the reason you put your fingers next to the candles. Forget about the nails and all of the other things you heard. Very, very simple reason. You put your hands there to make use of the light. You can make a brach on something, you need to make use of it. Again, ein b'vorchan al haner ad shiu tola oro. Dorish Reb Zeir b'rei d'Rav Avohu v'yar Elokim et ha'or ki tov v'achrakein achrakach v'yavdei Elokim b'in ha'or b'in ha'choshech. That's a very interesting Yerushalmi. Because what did it just now do? It talks about the fire by Havdalah, but which pasuk does it bring to discuss the fire by Havdalah? V'yar Elokim et ha'or ki tov. Rabbeinu Bechaye then, in Surah 16, just goes one step further with this, but he says what should be obvious. Ulekach tiknu lanu chazal, b'mitzvot avdala b'motzoi shabbat, shehu tchilat heter hamalachot, l'varech ala esh borei me'orei ha'esh, l'fisha esh tchilat hamalachot b'maseh bereshit. Fire was the very first thing that God did. U'kinyan shekatuv b'yom rishon v'yehi or. So you realize now, that this Rabbeinu Bechaye really is following off on that drasha of the Yerushalmi. So, what is it that I'm suggesting then? Lo tvar esh b'chol mosh v'techem b'yom ha-shabbat really, in a sense, is the first malacha. It's the first malacha because it represents the very first thing that God did when God created. And that, in a sense, is perhaps why it should be out of a separate from everything else, and therefore when we said before it's the most creative thing on man's side, it's also what I would call the definition of creativity on God's perspective. As I said, I want to go one step further with this and try to maybe just give a little bit more understanding, and then we'll stop. In the Seret HaDibrot, between Shmot, Yitro, and between Dvarim and Etchanan, there are a number of changes. The small change is what we sing about on Friday night, Shamor v'Zachor, Zachor v'Shamor, B'dibur Echad. Correct. Where in Shemot it says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, on Bet Chanan it says, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Now, the reality is, as important that may be, and there's a lot to talk about that, it's really, that's the minor point. When we continue in Shemot, it's Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, Sheshanim Tavod V'Asita Kol Melachtecha, V'Yom HaShabbat L'Hashem Elokecha, Lo Taseh Kol Melacha, Atah Ben Chavitecha, Avdecha Ben Chavimtecha, V'Gerecha Hashem V'Shirecha. Why? Ki sheshek yomim asah Hashem et Hashemayim et Haaretz, et yom et kol shabam, v'nech b'yom v'shiyah kem b'rachat Hashem, et Hashabbat v'kadshayu. So therefore, in Shemot, where are we pointing at? We're pointing at creation in terms of the rationale for Shabbat. When we get to Vetchanan, Shemort yom Shabbat l'kadsho, she'mim tabod v'asitukum l'achtef, yom shi Shabbat l'ashem l'kadsho, and so on, lo tasakum l'acha, it then says, v'zacharta ki evra yitab Eretz Yisrael. You were slaves in Egypt. Vayitziyacha Hashem Elokecha, Misham biyad chazaka v'zor netuya, kein tzivcha Hashem Elokecha lasot et yom HaShabbat. So when I think about what the difference is between Shemot and between Devarim, between Yitzro and between Bet Hanan, so on the one hand, Yitzro is talking about God's creation, which means we reverted back to the theocentric aspect of Shabbat. It has holiness because God created in 6 days. When I go to Yitro, when I go to Ve'et Chanan, it flips around to what? To the human aspect of it. Why do we have to keep Shabbat? Because God took us out. What I just want to point out now, okay, this is the end for today, is that those two actions, God's creation, begins with what? Begins with God saying Vayior, begins with the light. Taking us out is Hotza'ah, Mirishut, Lirishut. That these two melachot, which are the two exceptions, are actually the two elements which are written within the two aspects of the Aseret HaDibrot, and all the other melacha are the ones which are not included. Which means that even though we may say, oh, Hotza'ah, that's melechet Geruah, well, without Hotza'ah, we'd still be in Egypt. Vayitziacha is the language of Hotza'ah. Vayitziacha, God took us out of Egypt. That's Hotza'ah mirishut l'rishut. On the other hand, in creation, God created for 6 days, but what's the beginning of creativity? The beginning of creativity is the light, by Yior. That's where it all begins, and that's Lo Tivor Esh B'chol Moshevotechem. So that I can look and say that these two extremes over here do represent the Aseret HaDibrot in two places, and, you know, as far as, you know, so which one is the real thing? Okay, it's Eilu V'Eilu Divim Chaim, but it's not just Eilu V'Eilu, because it's really a revelation of two different aspects of Shabbat. So correct, on Shabbat we don't light the fire. We don't do that kind of creative work. On Shabbat, we don't take from Rishut to Rishut, which is almost forgotten because we have an Erev every place, and we make everything into one Rishut, which I guess if we were very Hasidic and very philosophical, we'd say, it's only Hashem's Rishut. Everything is part of the same Rishut. There's no different Rishuyot. Hakol Rishut Achad. And therefore, we're not ever taking anything out of Rishut, but we have forgotten to a great extent that part of it. But I'm saying, to me, it's just so striking when you realize that these two different formulations of Shabbat absolutely match with those two melachot.